Commander Jen Olson is here with us today. Of course, the former host of National Security This Week on these airwaves, and an adjunct professor at Carleton College, and author of thrilling. What's the genre again that we call your books, John?
So we refer to them as national security thrillers because they're not just military, they're not espionage, they include politics and diplomacy and law enforcement and a whole litany of other things. Yeah.
Question for you, John. If folks are interested in your books, they're distributed fairly widely, right?
Yeah, you can get them on Amazon. There's Kindle versions. Mm-hmm. There's paperback. Some of them have hardback. There's audiobook options. But if you go to Amazon.com and search on David Bruns, B-R-U-N-S, and J.R. Olson, you should easily find our books.
Okay. Can you find them at Content here in town?
I don't know.
Yeah. I'll check it out.
Someone should go talk to Content about your books because I think they'd sell pretty well over there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought it would be kind of interesting. As a student of political science, this is frankly a topic that I've never even broached before, but I thought it would be kind of interesting, seeing as this is kind of a timely topic, to talk about where U.S. national security intersects with the Vatican and the Catholic Church and the Pope. And I don't even know really. Obviously the Vatican is not quite an autonomous state, although I guess we recognize it as such. It's a city state. It doesn't have a gigantic military or anything like that. But John, tell us a little bit, like, what fundamentally, how do we figure the relationship between Vatican City and the United States?
Yeah. I will freely admit that I'm not Catholic. I don't know a ton about the inner workings of the Catholic Church. But what I have observed over the course of my career is that the Pope, as the leader of global Catholicism, has a significant impact on what's happening around the world simply because of Catholics. I mean, it's like, I don't know, 1.2 billion people are part of the Catholic Church or something.
Yep.
I'm not exactly sure of the number, but I think the last time I read it was like 1.2 billion. And I believe that number is growing, especially on the African continent, even as it recedes a little bit in Central and South America. But, the Pope is more of like a moral and ethical authority than anything else.
Yep.
Trying to guide people in their religious beliefs and, how they should live their lives, right?
Sure.
So I think if you think about that intersection, then there have been popes in the past who have gotten pretty engaged in international affairs.
Mm-hmm.
John Paul II, for instance, was staunchly anti-communist.
Yes.
and open about it, right?
Yeah.
Now, Pope Francis, I think, I don't know if the two of you would agree with me or not, but I looked at him as sort of somebody who tried very hard within the limits of Catholicism to advance the church significantly into the modern era.
Mm-hmm.
His predecessor, Benedict, was a little bit more of a traditionalist conservative, and Pope Francis was, I think, a big change from Benedict.
Yes, he was.
He came in. He has tried. Pope Francis tried to sort of engage in international affairs, but when you brought this up to me today, I thought, okay, let me do a little bit more research on this. So I dove into Francis's background, and back when he was in Argentina and kind of growing up in the Catholic Church. There was this idea of liberation theology. Have you ever heard of that
before? Oh yeah, yeah. That was a big deal when I was a student in the '80s, for sure. Liberation theology.
So, we both remember those things and the fight that was taking place primarily in Central America, but also in South America, where the Catholic Church was trying to combat poverty and deep inequality and things like that across. What was, kind of the center of the Catholic world at the time, Central and South America. and even so far as to taking a stand openly against more authoritarian governments. Mm-hmm. And it cost some of those priests their lives, like the Salvadoran priest Oscar Romero. Mm-hmm. There was a good movie about his story and the sacrifices he made. And he was assassinated by a right-wing death squad in 1980. But, you know, you and I would have been in roughly, what, junior high, grade school?
Yeah.
So that Francis apparently didn't really jump in with both feet on the liberation theology ideology so much. He stayed relatively quiet in Argentina. But he did embrace this idea, and I think he carried this through all the way through his papacy, of championing the cause of the poor and immigrants and the people who are kind of downtrodden in global society. He was a voice for their needs, which is, I think, really is the tradition of what the Catholic Church has been about in many ways, especially amongst the Jesuits, which he was a Jesuit. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put my co-host on the spot here. And I'm not sure.
Let's do it.
I'm not sure if you can answer this question or not. Mm. But can you talk about the difference between a non-Jesuit and a Jesuit Catholic?
No idea.
Okay. as I understand it, Jesuits are like you just sort of described, John. They're far more focused on helping the poor, taking care of those less fortunate. I think best examples of that might actually be from Pope Francis, who did not live in the papal apartments, but had a real simple home and did not like travel in the Pope mobile or a limousine. And just, I think they got him around in like a Yugo or something.
Real quick Google search results.
Yeah.
Jesuits are a Catholic religious order founded by Saint Ignatius of Loyola in 1540, and they are dedicated to evangelization and service, specifically education, social justice, and working for the greater glory of God, known for their commitments to finding God in all things and their involvement in a wide range of ministries. So, yeah.
And if I remember correctly, Pope Francis in his undergrad years was actually like a chemical engineering major or something like that. Okay. Is that right? So the Jesuits, as I've always thought of them, is they really do champion education. For instance, Georgetown University, you got a whole bunch of Jesuits who run that place.
Okay.
And they really care about advancing the human cause through education and science and whatnot. They almost try to marry science and religious belief together, where you find that doesn't happen a lot across a lot of religious faiths. So Jesuits are sort of a unique group. And if you think about the fact that he's a Jesuit and a champion of education and science and whatnot, as well as being a champion of the poor, immigrant populations, etc., he really came out strongly driving home the idea that climate change is real.
Yep.
And we need to come together to fight it. I mean, the Laudato Si, I don't know if you remember when he announced that, when that came out of the Vatican, makes the case that climate change is caused by human activity. Mm-hmm. And the people who are being hurt the worst are the world's poorest people. We, the wealthy countries, don't step up and do our part, we're actually committing a grave sin, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds right, knowing what I know about the Jesuit philosophy. The thing that kind of strikes me from a diplomatic standpoint is that the Vatican, an engaged pope who is sort of, I don't want to say pushing an agenda, but has priorities that he wants to put out there. I mean, that's almost the very essence of soft power, isn't it, John?
Oh, totally. I mean, it's not so that, I think it was it Stalin? I think it might have been Stalin who says, how many divisions does the pope have?
Yeah.
Well, none, but the power of the church, the Catholic Church, the power of the moral and ethical authority that he really has as the Pope has an impact because there is a global population of Catholics. So, for instance, under his papacy, he pursued détente with the Orthodox Church in Russia. Because there's been sort of that schism between Eastern Orthodox Christianity and Catholicism and whatnot. And he actually met with Patriarch Kirill in Havana in 2016, trying to heal that divide. Now, the unfortunate thing is Patriarch Kirill is all in on Russian nationalism and a big fan of war in Ukraine. Oh, dear. But that comes on much later.
Yeah.
But the Pope Francis has not really tried to take a stand directly in support of Ukraine or to directly denounce Russia for their invasion. Sort of a moral ambiguity, which he's shown in a number of other conflicts as well, including the current fighting that's happening between Israel and Hamas. Because what he's trying to do is he's asking for a ceasefire. He's asking for people to get to peace, right?
Right.
Because his concern is for the people who are being victimized by, you know, government actions or the actions of a terrorist group like Hamas, the people who are being killed or wounded in Ukraine and even Russia from the fighting that's going on there. So he's been sort of this champion for peace, really. Maybe to the point where he's been a little naive,
yeah,
on what, or unwilling to step into the political fray, rather focusing his papacy on trying to address the injustice of war, for instance, or climate change or these other issues. So it's been an interesting run for him, I think.
Yeah. You know, it occurs to me too, it wasn't even that long ago that I think a lot of people in this country were sort of concerned about how much power the Pope would have over U.S. citizens. I mean, there was a whole thing when John F. Kennedy ran for president. Well, he's a Catholic. Is he gonna stand up to the Pope, or will he answer to the Pope? And I mean, that's only 65 years ago. Which is a drop in the bucket for a lot of what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, in the history of the Pope and the Catholic Church goes back a very long time. Well, Joe Biden was only the second Catholic president we've ever had.
It's true,
and I don't think we ever saw a time when people would be concerned whether or not Joe Biden would bend the knee to the Pope on what the Pope wanted. I mean, the president of the United States has always been, you know, in the modern era since the end of World War II. The leader of the free world as far as political things go.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't think there was any direct impact by Pope Francis on President Biden's actions. I think Biden's actions were guided by Joe Biden and his advisors.
Yes, so, I agree.
I do think some of the things that Pope Francis did were really revolutionary within Catholicism and certainly break from his predecessors, and even a break from the things that he had stated while he was a cardinal down in Argentina. He actually fought against the de Kirchner government when Argentina was pushing to try and become the first nation in South America to recognize same-sex marriage. He actually tried to organize Catholics against that move and lost it. But I think he discovered something in that fight that he brought with him to the Vatican, where he definitely softened the position of the Pope and the Catholic Church on issues like same-sex marriage. I mean, that's a huge, huge change for the Catholic Church. And he had the courage to pursue that, to try and bring the Catholic Church into the modern era of 2025 rather than 1955, right?
You've still got, I mean, this is still an institution that, you know, will not recognize female clergy and has a lot of other, you know, almost prehistoric viewpoints. Mm-hmm. But something like that, an advocate, the Pope being an advocate for same-sex marriage was really, really surprising to see and pretty cool.
Yeah, he gave the priests authority to marry people in same-sex unions. So, I mean, it's a huge advance. So then the question comes, okay, He was a kind of a revolutionary pope in many different ways. He was not very good, I don't think, at foreign policy on the part of the Vatican. Mm-hmm. And the Vatican, this you need to understand, there are 184 states with diplomatic relations with the Holy See. Mm-hmm. 184 states, right? And the European Union has a connection as a conglomeration. The sovereign military of Malta is connected there. They're accredited, the Holy See of the League of the Arab States. They're part of the UN High Commission for Refugees, all, you know, based out of Rome. So there's a whole bunch of things that have happened. He reached out to the People's Republic of China to get a provisional agreement to have bishops appointed in the People's Republic of China.
Wow.
That's pretty different,
yeah,
right?
It is.
I mean, the Catholic Church really hasn't had an opportunity to do that before. So that's really unique. What I would say is, in the history of the Catholic Church, as the, you know, the College of Cardinals is getting ready to elect a new pope, what you've seen is every time the Catholic Church has made two steps forward, they always seem to make one step backward with the new selection of the pope. So my guess is, this is just me pontificating, so to speak,
there's going to be
a more conservative leaning pope that comes next. The question is, where will the pope come from? Will it be another European? Would it be another South American? Could it be somebody from the African continent?
I was thinking that same thing yesterday. We talked a little bit about that. That would be fascinating.
Yep. So I think if you look at Pope John Paul II, there was a meaningful impact for his papacy based on how he was raised and experiences of his life. I think you could say the same for Pope Francis. Mm-hmm. Where he was raised had an impact on his view on things. So depending upon where the next pope comes from, geographically around the world, that could have a significant impact on how the Vatican operates in the foreign policy arena, if at all, right? If at all.
It would be a massive step forward for the African continent, though, don't you think, to have a world leader like that?
Mm-hmm. It'd be a big change.
But just to have that representation in such high profile position would be huge.
Yes.
Wow. All right. Well, John, as always, thanks for your time, sir. We love these conversations, and we'll talk to you again next week.